The opinions expressed are those of the show hosts and may not necessarily be of any company in which the show hosts may represent. Welcome to the Tech Podcast, program number 362. Yes, it's been forever since we've done a technology podcast, and there's actually a good reason to bring back the Tech Podcast, and that is overflow content that quite can't make it on our weekly security box program. Stay tuned. I'll be working on stuff and we'll get this podcast back up and running for you. On this edition of the podcast, we've got Michael in Tennessee for the next hour and 35 minutes. Why I put up with him, I don't know, but he actually did talk about some of the more recent security-related events of the past few weeks. And who knows, could there be a solution to some of these that might have been come up? Well, you just don't know. This program will be coming up next. My email address is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. You can email or iMessage that address. Text or WhatsApp, 804-442-6975. Michael and I are coming up next on the Technology Blog and Podcast Series right here at jaredreimer.net. Enjoy, everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first Tech Podcast of 2022. Looks like we haven't done an actual Tech Podcast. And I've been finding a good reason to, although I have stuff that I want to cover that I thought we could put into the security box, but the security box has to keep up with the current stuff, and so I think we've got one good reason right here. We've got one person who hasn't said anything on any podcast probably since the pandemic. Welcome to the program, Michael in Tennessee.
Thank you. Yeah, life has gotten in the way of my, I guess you can call this a hobby. I still find some time to read, and boy, oh boy, haven't I read some interesting stuff today.
Well, you read stuff, and you listened to stuff. You listened to stuff that I got parts of because I was blogging, and so.
And, of course, T-Mobile's back in the news.
Yeah, they can't keep their, I'm not going to say they can't keep their nose clean, because we actually talked about them in Podcast 66 of Tech and Podcast, 66 of TSB, as well as Podcast 60 of the same TSB, both last year. I actually think they tried. You know, from what I read of this article, they tried. They were trying to say, hey, you know, yeah, you got our data. Let's pay somebody, and hopefully it won't get sold. And the article said this isn't the first time this has happened. This is quite common.
Yeah, I think that that maybe they have learned their lesson by now, and I think the laws in this country needs to be changed to where, you know, companies there should be limits to how long a company can hold on to, you know, our data, because a lot of the data that was stolen was of people who were no longer customers, or people who had applied for service and for whatever reason got denied or whatever. They should only be able to hold on to that information for a certain period of time. And this kind of thing wouldn't happen.
Or would it? I mean, they still got breached, and it was still 50 million people. And yes, it went back as far as 1996, and it did include former customers, but still. Even if a lot of them were still customers.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether it would happen again or not, but we got to come up with ideas to prevent it from happening, or to lessen the chances of it happening. Nowadays, you know, nothing's 100%, because we may try to lock things down, but somebody's going to figure out a way in. That's the fact of the life and technology. You know, it's like Apple can do whatever they can to be as close as they are, but they still gonna have problems. So no platform is gonna be 100%.
Well, and the hacks haven't been because of what Apple's doing. The hacks have been because of applications that have been put up in the App Store that they approved and then found out later, maybe not. And that's going to happen everywhere.
That's going to happen everywhere, yep.
So I think they actually do try. And of course, there are hackers that'll try and hack the phones, and of course, you still have the NSO group still at it again. I didn't read that article yet you sent to our list, but I guess they're still at it again.
Yeah, I didn't read it in its entirety either, but
and you've got companies like them, you know, who are gonna just use whatever and keep it shut, and
they are relentless in what they do. They don't give up. Then we have bad applications in the Google Play Store, and oh, what, 5 of them?
11 of them.
Oh, 11 of them. Oh my.
You forgot already.
Yeah, I did.
And you were the one that sent it, and we covered that in this last podcast on 90.
Yeah.
Of the security box.
Yeah. But I think that, as I've said before, Google, I think they are trying to clean it up, but you know, they waited too long. You know, as I've said on the episode of the Security Box, they tried. You know, nowadays you can't be open like Google is with the Play Store and not expect there to be problems. And I think that folks, it's so bad that they had to get third party help just to help them to clean it up. You know, it was that far out of control. And that's sad. But, you know, people give Apple grief about iOS being so close. Why do you think it's close like it is, folks?
I keep asking the question, why haven't we seen as many problems? Sure, we've got the NSL group, and sure, we probably have a few bad apps. I'm not saying that every app in the App Store is 100% legitimate. I'm not going to say that. There are too many of them, and a lot of them are only made for the vision-sighted world. So we can't vet every single app, and that's not our job. In the landscape, whether it's me as an accessibility person or whether it's, you know, some of your people like Brian Krebs and others who will do such things. And so I'm not saying that iOS is completely clean, but we don't hear about apps like Yellow Camera, which sticks out in my mind.
Yeah.
On the Android side.
I remember. Yeah, I remember that.
I went ballistic. It still sticks out in my mind. Now, for your benefit, I will only go through the apps from Podcast 89, and you tell me what you think. As I wrote up in the notes, these are, you know, legitimate-looking apps, like prayer apps and, you know, that type of thing. So I'm not saying that they're bad apps. I'm not saying that at all. But we've got a topic. Now, let's take this first app, for example, Michael. Speed Camera Radar. I could see that as a beneficial app for those people driving cars. They want to know where the radars are so they don't speed. That's a very legitimate sounding app. That's the first one in the list. Right?
Yep. Right.
Okay. Al Mosaic Light. Prayer Times. Now, okay, a prayer app? A prayer app? Alright, I could see that. You know, I know Michael in Indiana uses one of those types of apps, you know, that plays videos and teaches you things and
so do I.
And things of that nature. So I could see this app may be one of those. May have been one of those. By the way, it does look like these apps, some of them anyway, are back in the store, and Google has authenticated them as being cleaned up. I wrote that in the notes, if you remember.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi mouse. Why do you need a mouse for a phone?
Hmm.
So that was my question. In parentheses, remote control PC. Why am I, if I'm going to use a PC, I'm going to use a PC. I'm using a PC to do this taping in conjunction with LiveWire's connection. Yep. And the SIP app that I use, the session initiation protocol app.
Yep. Well,
I guess I could have just turned off the game and we could have done the whole thing in the conference, and then I could have taken the whole recording and then try to get it from that, but you know, from LiveWire itself, but it doesn't make sense. All right, next. QR and barcode scanner. Very authentic. You want to read your QR codes. Maybe it's a menu, maybe it's whatever. A barcode scanner? Absolutely. You know, for someone like me who lives alone, scan the barcode, possibly get directions on how to cook things.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Very helpful, very handy. But again, as of the October 2021, it was not safe. Maybe it's safe now. Maybe it's one of the ones that were back in the App Store. All right, next. Qibla Compass. Ramadan 2022. Not sure. Not sure what that's even supposed to do. Is it a prayer app? I don't know. Maybe.
It sounds like it's a compass. Similar... similar to the Compass app that comes with as one of the default apps on iOS.
Okay.
That's what it sounds like to me.
All right. Simple weather and clock widgets. What? I mean, a weather and a clock in one app? No. The clock app, at least on iOS, is 5 tabs in length, and it does a whole lot. It includes a stopwatch, a timer, bedtime help, a world clock, and your standard clock. It doesn't. Where are you going to put a weather in there?
Well, I have a Samsung phone. And and at one point in time, I had a one of those kind of apps on that. But I knowing what I know about the Play Store, I honestly tried to stay away from, if it's an app I have not used on iOS, then I know it's safe. I tried to stay away from it, but I'm not going to say I won't never run into one that will get me into trouble, but, you know, because it's likely to happen, but I just don't download any app. Knowing what I know about what goes on out there in the world today,
Let's see. Hand sent next SMS text with MMS. You're carrier already provides MMS and SMS services. You don't need an app for that. I mean, okay, if you want to use Google, you know, that's another provider if you don't want to use your carrier. But
yeah,
or text see, now, even.
That's what I was going to say.
But Handsent, that to me doesn't sound like a carrier.
Yeah.
At least not one I'm familiar with.
That's what I was about to say. It's not one I'm familiar with, and I would personally stay away from I don't like this attitude, but, you know, just the fact that there's so much evil out there, and you got people that put out apps that dishonest, and, you know, so I tried to stay away from apps that I'm not from the further push I'm not familiar with, and just because. One other thing I want to point out, just because an app has a high rating in any app store, does not necessarily mean those ratings are accurate. I don't remember if it was the Play Store or the Apple App Store, but there was this deceiving practice by a app developer that or someone that gave a group of apps a high rating, but whichever app store it was, they fixed that problem. So just remember, folks, just because the app has a high rating, you can't always go by those.
Yeah, I mean, I read that one, and I'm like, who are these guys? Like, everybody knows Google. Everybody, well, a lot of people might know TextNow, and there are. I saw when I was looking for apps to try and do recordings for the podcast, you know, to allow people to call and leave messages. There were some that I never even heard of, and I didn't download the apps. Yes, I read the descriptions, and that's another thing I tell people. Read the descriptions. It might help you make a decision. You still might get bit, but at least you have read the description and understand, you know, its intent anyway. Even if it's misleading, it's better that you read it instead of just getting the little get button next to it because you don't even know what the description of the app is. Oh, I found this app that says the Jared Reimer Network. Let's get it. And then you find out that it's not even my website or what I would even offer if you've been over to my pages. So that's why I tell people, you know, like Michael in Indiana, you have got to read the descriptions. It might be a waste, but you'll save yourself some time by at least understanding what the developer intends to do with the app. I'm not even saying it's 100% perfect, but at least you understand what it's telling you. Whether it does what it says, you know, that's something else. But I'm not about to tell people, just go search for the Jared Reimer Network and download it, because there could be 20 apps with that name on it. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's why I keep telling people, you want me to download an app? Send me a link.
when yeah, I if you know if Mac or even you were to send me the app, I would ask you all to share it with me, like through the App Store. Then I'll know that if I get bit, it's something that you all didn't know about, which is unlikely, but it's still possible. And to be clear, see, my phone doesn't ring until I get. Let me see who it is. Sorry, folks. People have stuff. You sit all day and do nothing. Then you get in the middle of something, and the telephone starts ringing. But anyway, if we send, I always ask for the link to a text, a message, or if it's someone know. On the Android side of things, to send me a link to the app, the Play Store, because I want to know, you know, that I'm downloading the correct application, because there is applications that looks like, you know, there could be an application that looks like, for example, say I didn't know anything about Google Forms. There could be a app that looks exactly like Google Forms. I wouldn't know any different. And then I would be had. So, you know, it's important to know what you are downloading, because you may be letting some bad actors have free reign of your phone and not even know it.
So you're telling me you wouldn't get SmartKit 360?
No.
How about Al Quran MP3, 50 reciters and translation audio?
No. And I definitely wouldn't get that Babble application either.
How about full Quran MP3 50 plus?
No.
Oh, that's none one I didn't. I didn't read to them. Languages and translation audio. Okay, let's see. How about, what is this? Audio's droid.
No.
Audio Studio DAW.
Oh my, no.
Alright, that's the end of the list. You're not gonna get any of those? I thought you were into audio. You like your audio.
I like my audio, but I'm going to get it from trusted and reliable sources that I don't put my device at risk or any personal information that I may have. It's like, remember that article I sent to you about Amazon and the vulnerability they had, where that you could hear that based on certain background noise. A outside person could have free reign of your Amazon smart speaker.
Oh, I must have missed it. I don't think I read that one.
That was some time ago. So you could have just forgot about it.
Or I could have mass deleted, because at one point I had quite a number of them and I just needed to start over. So I could have missed it.
But it... And one of my speakers is giving me what they could do is they could basically adjust settings. I don't believe they could get into your financial information or anything like that. But they could play around with your settings, and they could, So they had, Amazon had that problem and it's fixed. I've not had a chance to get in contact with Amazon though to one of my speakers are still giving me that problem, and I don't know what to do to fix it. I don't remember what the article said or if it said, but my life is getting in the way of other things lately. So I've not had a chance to... I'm always behind. Sorry to those of you who keeps up with the Security Box email list. I do the best I can to get you all... your stuff from different sources as quick as I can, but sometimes it's days, if not weeks, old by the time I get it to y'all. But I definitely wouldn't get any of those apps. And I, like I said, for the most part, I don't download something from, especially from the Google Play Store. Unless I'm familiar with the developer that puts it out. And I hope that you all out there will do the same. And let's see. Spring Food Day that has been making the news.
It's called Spring for Shell, not Jay.
Spring. Okay, I'm still stuck on the other one. My bad.
Actually, it's called Spring Shell. They sort of dropped the four, but go ahead. You were listening to the podcast for 866. I haven't listened to it yet. What do you think of what Steve said? What's going on? Talk to us about it.
Well, I'll do the best I can. I kind of got comfortable and fell asleep in the middle of it, so...
Good job.
I did catch that there's already been $3,400 plus attempts to I don't know. It just seems that we're getting more and more stuff like this, and I'm scratching my head, and I think that the some of it, to be honest, there was some of it went over my head, but because it does seem a little complicated to me.
That's because it is.
I don't remember. Did it say how long that it has been out there before it was found to be a problem?
Well, we talked about it. Everybody talked about it last week, and it was just it could be run in certain circumstances, but not under default, is what was told then.
Oh, okay.
So that was last week. Yeah. But then there was another vulnerability. We talked about both of those in podcast 89 of TSB. Could have been coincidental. And I bet what probably happened is they chained everything and now came up with an exploit. I read the notes, but I haven't heard what Steve said, so I don't know what Steve actually said. I read the notes. You know how he relies on the notes to a system like I do. But he could explain it without having to rely heavily on the notes like I do.
I don't know. It's just we're starting to hear more and more about different vulnerabilities on different platforms. I mean, geez, what was the biggest one? Was it last year or this year? In December into January.
That was Log4j, and that sort of fell. And it hasn't really, there's still, the last I heard, there's still scans for it, but unless I missed an episode somewhere, I don't think we've heard a whole lot about Log4j since it broke in December. And we talked about it on TSB.
And
these are both of these are server specific attacks. Let's make that clear. Spring Shell deals with forms and other pieces of code. And Log4j is server specific Apache stuff. So at least if I remember it correctly, but
I know SpringSail is a server problem, a server one.
Yeah, Log4j was more of a vulnerability in the way, you know, things were logged in Apache.
Yeah. So I just wonder how vulnerabilities like this happens. Is there something that can be done to prevent them, or is it just faulty code?
Well, don't forget, how do you find a vulnerability? You go looking at somebody's code. Oh, let's see what we can do if we do this. And if it crashes, that's what starts the chain, and then they can turn it into something that the developer had no intention of it ever doing.
Well,
every time I find bugs, I always tell the developers, I don't know what I did. I just know I pushed this button, I pushed that button, and it crashed. I don't know what. You know, I tell them, I don't go try to, oh, let's see if I could, you know, try to, you know, reverse engineer all this code. But then again, that's not who I am anyway.
I'm about to hang somebody. Yeah, if you go trying to fix something you know nothing about, that's going to cause more trouble than it really would.
I mean, these guys do illegal stuff. They'll reverse engineer the code and figure out how that broke, and then they'll try and exploit it and turn it into something that it's not.
Then I read an article, a little bit ago that talking about one of our NOS, I can't remember the name of the hacking group now. But I got to, speaking of hacking, if any of you out there has been paying attention to this whole Ukraine thing, the United States needs to take lessons from Ukraine. They actually prevented a hack into the electric grid.
But our electric grid is so, I was in Clubhouse rooms talking about this, and our U.S. grid is so complex that they could only, in theory, take down a portion of an area. Now, I do know the other day, on the day of the recording, we had a power outage that lasted about 15 minutes, and it was very wide. The scanner was reporting a lot of code 30s. Those are alarms. And the lights were out as, you know, quite a number of miles east of where I am in the studio. And I went looking to see what it was about and never found an article from KNX about it. And I never saw anything about a potential targeted attack, which I was wondering if it was a successful attack against our grid. I haven't seen anything yet. And that was yesterday, and we're recording on the 15th. So, I'm putting my eyes out to try and watch to see if something comes out about that.
Yeah.
Part of the train system was also affected by that too, I think. But I don't have any proof.
Yeah. It's really okay. I was distracted by my voiceover. I think that, do you think, Jared, that our electric grid is, what can we do in this country to protect all of our critical, all of our, like, electric grid,
gas take it companies off the net. It doesn't need to be on the internet. That's why it's hacked, because it's got connected to the internet. That's why we have these problems. You don't need to have the electric grid connected to the internet. If they take out your internet, your electric grid will be fine, but then you can't manage it unless you go in. You don't need to manage it from anywhere.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I 100%.
That's the only way to fix it. Disconnect it from the internet.
But, I mean, don't you think that if they, which I guess this is a bad idea, because if they had to spend more money, that means we pay more for electricity.
We're already paying more. I'm going to be paying $145, and I used, it says 606 kilowatt hours. That's 6 hours of electricity. I'm already paying, I'm already paying out my nose for electricity.
It depends on where you live in the country on that one.
I mean, the bill was like, until all the taxes were added up, it was $132. It's expensive. And that's every 2 months. That bill's every 2 months.
Yeah, I think it's really too sad that we got people. I mean, I think there's real good reasons for us for to be able to manage things outside of the office. But you know, I mean, I know that if they take it off of the offline, then you know it. I think one reason they have the electric grid online is to potentially figure out where a problem is, where they can fix it as quick as they can.
But it's not protected by anything. There's no firewalls, there's no way to prevent an outsider if they figure out how to get in there, as some of them have, to do some sort of damage. They can't take the whole United States down, but they can take down a good area at a time.
I don't remember what caused it, but I remember a few years ago, this has been a while ago, half of the East Coast, Tennessee wasn't affected by this, but there was a big blackout.
Somebody hacked it.
Oh, was that what the...
I believe so. It was, yeah, I believe it was a hack. And it was probably blamed on, like, I don't want to say for sure, because I don't remember. But it could have been a Russia or one of these, or a China. And they probably, like, installed malware or put malware on the system, and somebody ran it because they were told to run it. And it went throughout the network, as malware does. Now, I could be completely wrong. We could probably do research on it. You're talking about the 2018 outage, or you're talking about the 2016 one when Russia took out Ukraine?
No. The one I'm talking about affected New York City. This was some time ago. Most, if not all of New York and a lot of the East Coast was affected by it.
Yeah, I'd like to say that that was more than likely a cyber attack, but I don't remember for sure, and I would rather say I don't remember than blame one or another, because
I don't remember.
I think Krebs covered it, because I remember leaking to it from somewhere when I was writing about something or another, so I think it was a 2018 attack. But I'd have to look.
I do remember ABC and where all the networks pretty much was broadcasting the generator power. Because all the power was out in Times Square and the rest of New York. So that it was out for more than 3 days, I believe. But it's been so long ago, I don't remember what it cost. But I think that's one solution, taking the grid off of the internet. But if you're going to have it on the internet, as much as we pay power, you should at least have some security. Or if it's hacked and we, and our power gets affected, gets interrupted, we shouldn't have to pay a bill. That's my personal opinion, but
I don't think you pay when you're not getting power anyway. So,
well, I know, but but if you made the choice to have the grid on the internet and not secure the system, I'm saying that we should expect more out of a public utility company than that. You know, we've talked about what is a JBL, the meatpacking plant that got hacked.
JBS, yeah. JBS.
And then shortly after that, another big four company got hacked. You know,
And all of those were ransomware. So, those two were ransomware attacks.
So, we have, in the age of technology, it's, you know, we have, it's not safe to be on the internet nowadays. It really is not. No matter how convenient or how easy it may be to figure out what's going on with a certain with a certain outage or whatever, it may it's just not safe. And you get sometimes they think they have shut down a hacking group, which they may, but the hacking group has already made enough money to just start it all over again under a different name. How many times have we seen that?
I covered that one last year, I think.
So, it's a problem that in the age of convenience, you know, all they have to do nowadays is drive by your house and point a thing at the meter on the side of your house, and then they have how much you have to pay. Electricity. So, I mean, I think that's one reason that they have the grid on the internet, is where they can do things like that. But like I said, if there's no other alternative but to have it on, connected to the internet, at least protect your customers. Care just as much if not more, for the customers as you do the money that you're getting from the customers. I think one of the woes that's one of the worst things about our world today is the greed in it. I really think that we are one of the most advanced nations as far as technology on this earth, and I don't think we do enough to appreciate what we have. You have banks getting hacked, credit card companies getting hacked, I really don't know.
Yep.
And the security of our cell phones, that's the other thing that bothers me. You know, all the companies, all the manufacturers of cell phones cares about is, and there's nothing wrong with it to a certain degree, all they care about is making money. But not everybody can afford, or even if they can, people don't see, I bought an iPhone in 2020. I still haven't. It still works good. You know, it's not a need for me to go out and buy a new phone. But I'll give Apple one thing, that they have started giving us security updates, at least for 2 or 3 years after they stop updating the phones or the software.
Well, remember, that was talked about in an article some time back, that they should be giving us updates for a number of years, remember?
Yeah.
And they didn't really want to do that.
And
none of the manufacturers really wanted to do that.
And there's still some, you know, it's like Google with their Pixel phone. The lifespan of phone are 3 years, and because they stop supporting them with software updates. I don't care about features. I think it's important because, you know, if one of those hacking outfits knows that people has phones that's not being updated, or any internet connected to fast for that matter, not just phones, but anything that connects to the internet. Because once you are connected to the internet, folks, if you the fans is not got the latest security, you are easy to be had.
But that's not necessarily the case. There could be a zero day that they don't know about that these guys could be taking advantage of.
That too. But it always recommended that you have the most recent updates because of security. And I've always said that I think security updates themselves should be separate from major software updates. To a certain degree, I don't believe those particular, unless you're talking about Microsoft, that seems to sometimes break things when they send out security updates. So I didn't say that.
That's public knowledge.
That is. And honestly, I don't know of anybody else that puts out software that does that. I'm not saying there's no one else that does it, but Microsoft is the first one I've heard about that has done so. But I think that, you know, if I know we don't talk about politics on this program, but you know, when you think about it, in some cases this technology, especially nowadays, should be a little bit more regulated than what it is. You know,
and none of these guys understand it. I mean, you've got, what's his name, the guy in Oregon. He understands it because he always writes, I always see articles with his name and how he's writing, asking questions. But most of these guys don't understand it.
You know, we really need to.
That's why we had that bad legislation, you know, PIPA, and what was the other one that was talked about that we all were told to not have passed because it included stuff that they put in there that didn't make any sense?
Are you talking about some of the laws in California?
Not necessarily California. Oh, the other one was SOPA. SOPA and PIPA.
Oh.
Those two.
Oh. I don't remember either one of those.
That's because they weren't passed, because they were forced on us, and they said it was gonna do all of this, and people came out and said that it was doing other things that we didn't ask for. So they never passed. They were voted no. Because these legislators think they know what's going on, but they don't really understand it.
You know,
that's the problem we got. We need to have people like Steve Gibson in there, you know, who knows it all, to write legislation do what needs to be done.
Speaking of a security person, I don't remember what it was concerning. Maybe you do. I believe I sent the article to you, or to the list. Brian Krebs,
Yeah, he's getting, we talked about that either in 89 or 90 in our commentary section.
Oh, I must have missed some of it. Most likely it did, because I snoozed a little bit.
But yeah, he's still writing, so apparently, but it's Ubiquity's own fault, Michael. I mean, if they would have done the job correctly, they wouldn't be in this predicament anyway. The only reason why they're suing Krebs is because they didn't like a copy of the article. And I read that block quote, basically that portion of the article they're having a problem with, and it was spot on. There was nothing wrong with it. I don't understand what the problem is. They're just sore because Krebs knows what he's talking about, and the fact that, I mean, the only thing that Krebs didn't say was who the insider was. Well, that's his job. His job is to, you know, is not to say who his source is.
Yep.
That's his job. Yeah. If you can't do that, then you can't write journalism.
I hear your favorite sound.
That's as simple as it is. And some of our people, you know, Preston said it, and Nick said, he's like, well, that Preston said that, you know, Krebs was spot on in that article. He read a good portion of it. I don't understand what the problem is. Why are they going after somebody who writes good journalism? They had a problem with both of those articles. One, because he's saying the source that he talked to said one thing, and then it came out and said that, you know, whoever, I forget the guy's name at the moment, was arrested. Well, that's what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
That is what he's supposed to do, Michael. You're not supposed to tell who your sources are. Especially on something like that. Then they would probably sue that person for telling a news source about it anyway, and sue them for a bunch of money. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But I know how journalism works, and Brian's doing the right thing. I hope that he wins that and gets that money instead. And just because the site has advertising doesn't mean that he's got $425,000 to send to a company because they didn't like what he has to write. Sorry, I don't believe that crap. I read that article and that disgusted me. You can read my thoughts about it on the blog.
It's just disgusting. I honest, somebody who's honest like Brian, that gets thrown under the bus.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine. You know, maybe he'll just pay them to shut him up, and he'll be fine. We don't know. I mean, he may write about it at some point, and he'll talk about it, I'm sure. He's known for doing that. Remember, he was writing about how he got, how he was, sent how somebody was supposed to show up to pick up drugs on his house and how he was able to contact his people and have that picked up, and the underground people found out about it and got mad. Remember? He wrote it.
Hey, yep.
He wrote about it. So I bet you, no, I'm not going to charge you for it, but, you know, I bet you that he's going to end up eventually writing about this and how Ubiquity turned this into a, we didn't like this because you wrote this up and that hurt us, and we wanted to sue you to try and get you to take down your blog posts, which he didn't do.
Well, no.
At least I don't believe he did. It seems like he didn't from what I read. And likely so.
That would defeat the freedom of the press. Because, you know, Brian is a member of the press. Just like any, you know, when you think about it, he's protected by the law. So I think he'd be okay.
Well, that's the First Amendment. We can say what we want, and he's got, you know, he worked for the Washington Post before he went on his own, if you remember correctly. So he's got press credentials if he wants to use them. I don't. I just, you know, write it as an opinion, you know, as opinions. You know, here's an article. Here's what I think. You know, I don't need a press credential to do that. So he'll be fine. He'll probably write about this in a few months. Whether he's paid or not, we won't know, but he's probably gonna fight it. He'll go to court with the copy of the articles, and he'll show the judge that he tried to contact them when he first learned about the breach, and they tried to deny everything. And so he wrote it up, and then they came out with what happened, and then somebody came, and then somebody got arrested, and he wrote that up after the fact, and all of that. I don't understand what the problem is here. That's how this works.
I'm not worried. He'll come out of it just fine.
Like, I read that quoted piece, I'm like, what's wrong with it? That's the truth, as far as we know at the time.
And I think that it's ridiculous that it seems like that nowadays we are not, even if it's fact, whatever it is, if it's fact, somebody tries to prove that it's not. And I think that's what happened here.
Yeah, and he'll prove it in court. They'll probably go to court, and he'll show them everything and say, okay, judge, what do you want me to do? Because I went based on what I was told, and by law, I don't have to review my sources because I'm a journalist. Here's my press credentials. Here's my resume. Here's who I've worked for. Here's my book.
It's just, I can't wrap my brain around what people has to be. And when it's all said and done, Brian Krebs is just a small peanut compared to the company that is taking him to court.
Well, if Ubiquity didn't have the problem to begin with, this wouldn't have been a problem. And even if they had the problem, they came out and said, yes, this is what the deal is, and it was published as such. But remember those articles. Ubiquity said, we don't have a problem. And then the next article, oh yeah, we did have a problem and we fixed it. So they came out and denied the whole thing anyway. So you tell me who's lying.
And that in itself should clear Brian Krebs of any wrongdoing. Because, I mean, he reported it to them. Then they came back at him and told him that there wasn't a problem. So I think that he's safe.
I think so too.
I don't think they have a leg to stand on.
Remind us,
Jared. What is this company that's known as the brand? What exactly do they do?
Ubiquity makes routers. Remember? I believe they're the router company.
I believe you are correct now that you mentioned.
And their stuff got owned. And they tried to deny it and saying that there wasn't a problem. And then they came out and said, oh yes, we did have a problem. And then the guy who tried to cover himself up by claiming to aid in the investigation actually ended up getting arrested. And Brian wrote that up himself. That's what they have the problem. It seems like,
yeah. So
he'll be fine.
Yep. I just happened to think about that one, and I thought that because I think it's just a waste of the court's time myself.
He'll fly to Ubiquity's headquarters and unless they got a flight to Virginia where he is, I don't know how that's going to work, but wherever it's going to be, it should, in my opinion, be an open and shut case.
Yep.
I don't see why there should be a big, huge problem. I hope to read about this in the coming 6 months.
Yep. We've not heard the last of this story. There was a couple other things that I can't think what they are. And I think that can you think of anything we've covered recently that I've not thought of? There was a couple other things.
Probably plenty if you haven't listened to the podcast since the last time you opened your mouth. There's probably plenty, but am I going to go through and...
No.
through it all with you? No. We could be here another 2, 3, 4 hours.
We don't want that, do we?
I don't know. Do you?
No.
I suppose I could make it work.
Nah, I have some other things I need to do. So, it's been almost a year since I've done a, even longer since I've done a tape podcast with you.
Like I said, you haven't been around here since after 66, I believe, when we talked about T-Mobile and their problems.
Yeah. But I don't I think I'm pretty much done. And I have I am going to try to get out more often, and the key word here is try. But in the meantime, I can, I can be contacted at, I've already, it's been so long, I forgot my email address. that's sad. I got to look it up. Let's see. Sorry, folks. Okay. So, with anything you have to say, you can feel free to email me at michael.tag@phonetalk.me. And now, even though that it's not been updated in a while, I also do have a blog. It's phonetalk.me. It seems like I'm leaving something out of that. I'm going to try to become more active in updating that too. In the meantime, I am out of here for now.